Now, London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK, London's premier forum for news, views, and up-to-date information. Here's Andy Udman.
Jack Abramoff may be the most notorious and crooked lobbyist of our time. He was at the center of a massive scandal of brazen corruption and influence peddling. As a Republican lobbyist starting in the mid-1990s, he became a master at showering gifts on lawmakers in return for their votes on legislation and tax breaks.
I was so far in it that I couldn't figure out where right and wrong was. I believed that I was among the top moral people in the business. I was totally blinded by what was going on.
It all came crashing down 5 years ago when Jack Abramoff pled guilty to corrupting public officials, tax evasion, and fraud, and served 3.5 years in prison.
I'm having two reactions. One is brilliant, and the other is I'm sick to my stomach.
Right, evil. Yeah, terrible.
Because it's hurting our country.
Absolutely. It's the worst thing that could happen. All parts of the system. I was mad at me.
I'm not kidding. I'm not
kidding. I was mad at me. Leslie, look, I did things, and I was involved in the system I should not have been in.
I have sinned against you, my Lord. And I would ask that your precious blood.
Yeah, you thought we were talking about Jimmy Swaggart. We could be. I have never read quotes about someone that were this vile. I mean, this is like they're talking about the devil himself when they're talking about Jack Abramoff. And you're wondering, who is Jack Abramoff? Well, Jack Abramoff is scum, says Paul Begala from CNN Crossfire. Here's another quote. This stuff could gag a maggot. Margaret Carlson of Capital Gang writes, the most evil lobbyist ever to be operating in Washington. One congresswoman writes, he is a creep and we hate him. Another writes, lower than pond scum, parasite with no redeeming qualities. Pam Colleen, all the people you have on this show generally are heroes. Boy, have you gone to the other end of the spectrum.
Oh, I think what Jack Abramoff is doing is crucial to the work that I do in terms of trying to get the truth out to the public.
But people right now are saying, wait a minute, Pam Colleen, isn't she the health and wellness coach who's always trying to get us to improve our... What does that have to do with an American lobbyist?
Well, in a sense, what this is today, this show is a dedication to a friend of mine, Dr. Louise Light, who used to work for the USDA. And after she worked for the USDA, she came forward and blew the whistle on the impact that lobbyists have on our food guide. And back in 1992, she warned the Secretary of Agriculture for the USDA that the food guide that they ended up publishing would cause a diabetes and obesity epidemic. And essentially what happened was is they didn't listen to real science or common sense. They just listened to lobbyists.
Well, on that note, I want to welcome Jack Abramoff. Jack, how are you?
Hi, thanks for having me.
Are you wearing a devil costume, or do you have a suit on?
Well, I took off the devil costume a little earlier. I've got the suit on now.
I couldn't get over Leslie Stahl on 60 Minutes. There was one point she was going to come across, there was no table, but she was going to come across the table and physically strangle you. She hated you so much.
No, I mean, she actually was, what I was talking about with her was what goes on in Washington and what I, frankly, was. I mean, what I was in the middle of in those days. And, you know, now I'm trying to do everything I can to end that system, but it is a very disgusting system which has taken over American politics.
I apologize for playing that clip of Jimmy Swaggart, but the similarities are there. When I watch Jimmy Swaggart now, and he's still out there, and so is his son, I always admired him before, and he's a very gifted man. I love to watch him, but now I watch him, and he is, like, he would fit, like a pond scum, parasite, and so on. But, Jack, tell us your story. It's an incredible story.
Well, first let me give some context to the quotes you read. The publisher asked me to get some quotes, advanced quotes, for my book on the back. It's, one usually sees in a bookstore, and frankly, I hadn't shown my manuscript to anyone, and I thought it would be more provocative and interesting in the context of telling my story to write about what people, those are all politicians, by the way, what they were saying in those days as the scandal broke, and frankly, what a lot of them are saying now. You know, I was a very prominent and successful lobbyist in America, and I built what I guess was arguably the largest lobbying, single lobbying practice in Washington. And unfortunately for me, I crossed the line in sort of doing the lobbyist work, most of which, by the way, is legal, all of which nauseates people. And it's kind of like looking inside of a sausage factory as to how legislation in America is made. The difference is you don't really have to eat the sausage if you don't want to, but in America you're going to have to deal with the results of what they do here. And so what I've decided to do after going through what I went through, and it included, by the way, spending a good chunk of time in prison for things that I was involved in, I decided during that process that I would try to make some recompense and not only reveal what's really going on in the system, but try to do something to help change it.
Well, one thing we've always been suspicious of when people are caught doing something evil and they go to prison is that they do two things which are so common. They find God, and then they do the TV circuit, write a book, and make another wheelbarrow full of cash writing the book. So how do we know you're still not the evil person that these people say you are, and you're just on this radio show to sell your book?
Well, first of all, you should know, unfortunately for me, there's a $44 million restitution order ahead of me. So even if my book sells better than the Da Vinci Code, or maybe even the Bible, I'm not going to wind up benefiting. I didn't really do it, frankly, in a way. I didn't do it to make money. And as you know, the publishing business, in any event, even with successful books these days, is not making a lot of money. What I did it for is to get the message out and to let people know what I know. And to correct to some degree, by the way, this kind of cartoon image of my banality and my kind of evil. I sat quiet when this thing happened. I was trying to figure out what was going on for the most part and, frankly, to get through it. And so I didn't publicly defend myself. And, you know, unfortunately for me, they kind of got carried away a little bit. I even got blamed, by the way, for Katrina in some of the newspapers in Louisiana. It was kind of, you know, at this point, I was open season. So they, you know, I wanted to kind of have a little bit of a corrective to show that I'm a human being. And, you know, I made mistakes. I did things that were wrong. And, you know, how did I get there? How did I wasn't born with horns. I was born like everybody else. And so how does one get to these places? You know, how does one find oneself where one is at? And this is one of the reasons I wrote the book. And, you know, and I hope that hope people will read it in that light.
Now, Jack, your current book is called Capital Punishment, but you mentioned on 60 Minutes that you'd like to write a book called The Idiot's Guide to Buying a Congressman.
No, actually, what I said was I considered calling my book The Idiot's Guide to Buying a Congressman because, unfortunately, it is so prevalent in Washington, what's going on right now.
Okay, now, the whole point of this interview is not so much about Jack Abramoff, but how contaminated our political system is. And whenever I hear the word lobbyist, Jack, I want you to know my blood pressure goes up. Pam Kalina has been telling us on her weekly appearance for a long, long time how contaminated our political decisions are because of people like you. And I want to ask you about how contaminated it is and how it affects virtually everything we do and buy and in turn affects our health. So this is a very serious matter. We'll be back with that with Jack Abramoff to talk about that, all of that on the occasion of the release of his book, Capital Punishment, right here in London today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
It all came crashing down 5 years ago when Jack Abramoff pled guilty to corrupting public officials, tax evasion, and fraud, and served 3.5 years in prison. I'm having two reactions. One is brilliant, and the other is I'm sick to my stomach.
Right, evil. Yeah, terrible.
Because it's hurting our country.
Absolutely. It's the worst thing that could happen. All parts of the system. I was mad at me.
I'm not kidding.
I was mad at me. Leslie, look, I did things, and I was involved in the system I should not have been in.
Jack Abramoff, in conversation with Pam Colleen and with me, Andy Udman, this morning. It was said about Jack Abramoff, I love this quote, he could sweet-talk a dog off a meat truck. Do you take that as a compliment, Jack?
No, of course not. I don't take any of what I did before as a compliment or, you know, or positive. I was in a business I shouldn't have been in, and I played it in a way I shouldn't have played it, and I did things I shouldn't have done, and I got punished.
We got several minutes here, and I want to use them as the very best way we can to get as much information across as we can,
sure.
Short of people reading your book, which they're going to rush out and do, especially just before Christmas. They're going to grab this book. Pam, would you set this up? Because you have said so many times that our whole political system is contaminated, and so many of our laws are passed based on the influence of people like Jack Abramoff, who would come along to these people who work for congressmen and offer them a job. When you're done with a congressman, come and work for us and we'll triple your salary. You make the point, and then I want to ask Jack to respond to it.
Well, I think that Jack spoke about this in the 60 Minutes piece, about the bribery, the gift-giving, the influence that they put upon these congressmen. And then he talked about the arrogance that lobbyists have, that they somehow feel like they're smarter than politicians and they know how to pull the wool over their eyes. So maybe, Jack, you can elaborate on some of those points.
Yeah, basically, I think what's going on is two things. First, it's important to know, number one, lobbying is not a bad thing. Lobbying is a right, petitioning our government, that's in the Constitution. Lobbyists are not bad always. Okay, there are many good lobbyists. There are many lobbyists who don't infuse in their efforts money. They don't use money to influence congressmen either through, contributions or dinners or all those other things that frankly are nothing but bribes at the end of the day. So what we need to do in America is get to a system where there's a level playing field, where corporations and unions and special interest groups and others can't use their money to win and make their merits more meritorious than the other guy's merits. And I think we overlook, when we blame the lobbyists only, we overlook the role of the congressmen. The congressmen are making these rules. They're keeping these perquisites for themselves because they enjoy them. They want to make sure that they, in fact, most of them want to one day become lobbyists themselves. So the reform that I talk about in the book is very important, that these rules are changed. And if they are, then I think things like that, which you're working on, Pam, and other things that are very important will have their equal say in Washington and be able to, frankly, hold the day.
But how do you see this reform happening, Jack? I mean, this is such a pervasive problem.
It is a pervasive problem, but I have to tell you, of late, there's a lot of hope. First of all, to their great credit, 60 Minutes, both in terms of my piece and the piece they did the next week, identifying the problem of the congressional insider trading, this has really raised the awareness throughout America of these problems. More and more people are angry with the Congress. Congress in America has less than a 9% approval rating. I think they're child molesters who have higher approval ratings than Congress. And what's going to happen, what happened, by the way, in 2010, is a lot of the congressmen were thrown out. I think we've seen, by the way, the last three elections in America, 2006, 8, and 10, were change elections. We're going to see it again in 2012. And with hope, we can start developing members of the Congress who understand these issues. And I know that there are a lot of reform groups who are finally starting to come together in an effective legislative way to push some of this reform agenda.
Now, who do you think the government is really working for? Are they working for industry, or are they working for the people?
Well, I think that there are times when they're working for the people, and they certainly like to present themselves as working for the people, but at the end of the day, the people don't get to get into these rooms where the decisions are made. This is where the lobbyists, this is what the lobbyists are paid for, by the way. This is what I was paid for, to be able to have, maintain, and increase my access and get in the room and make my arguments and basically close down anybody else's arguments. And that's what goes on in the discussions in Washington.
And when there's money involved, and we have just a couple of moments left, and I want you to make this crucial point, when there's money involved, and you're buying off and bribing congressmen, politicians generally, you're paying them to make the decision your way, which means bad decisions.
Exactly.
And so can you give me one example, one blatant example of a decision made in Washington under the influence of lobbyists, which for the people, as Pam was saying, is it for the industry or for the people, which was blatantly a bad decision in which the people would be harmed?
Well, I'll give you an example that's been in the news recently, which is this Solyndra loan. Here they make a loan to a company of $500 million, knowing that it's going under, and they have the lobbyists in there working away, and the donors as well. This is one example. By the way, it's hard to say one example. Frankly, finding an example where it doesn't happen is harder than finding examples where it does happen.
Oh, my word. And this idea of gift-giving, has there been any limits on the amount of gifts going towards congressmen? I mean, you used to shower them with all sorts of gifts, everything from tickets to concerts and ball games and your restaurant that you owned.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen any sort of modifications to that system?
Yes, Pam, there are limits. They do put some limits on, but there's so many loopholes. And I'll give you a quick example. I can't take a congressman out and buy him lunch for $25. But if I declare that lunch a fundraising event, I not only can buy the meal, I can hand them $20,000 in political contributions, and that is completely legal. So every one of these rules that they make, they put enough loopholes that they can just blithely continue on their way. What needs to happen is a complete ban, not a dollar, not a glass of water. Nothing of value conveyed from a lobbyist or their clients, those who are importuning the government to get their benefits, not at all to a public servant. Until it's zero, we're going to have problems.
Okay, just 1 minute left, and I want to ask you this, Jack. And I don't expect you have any particular awareness of what the situation is in Canada, but maybe a quick comment on what might be happening in Canada or around the world, in any information that you have that we are not totally immune from this kind of contaminated politics.
Human beings are human beings. We all have the same incentives and proclivities and all the rest. Whenever there's power, whenever money gets near power, you're going to have these problems. Everybody, nobody is immune to this.
Can you, in the years that God gives you to live yet, undo any of the damage you've done?
This is exactly what I'm doing. This is what I'm trying to do for every day that I have left. It's going to be an arduous task. I'm trying. I wrote an entire book about it. I'm speaking about it. I'm being attacked, by the way, vociferously, like in the old days, only from different people, because I'm saying this. I'm talking about what goes on in those rooms. I want Americans and others to be aware of it and to do something about it, and I'm going to do everything in my power to try to help it.
Well, I know Christians believe in forgiveness. Do you believe in forgiveness big enough to forgive a guy like Jack Abramoff?
Are you asking me?
I'm asking you.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, well, look, my faith believes that if one sins, one repents, one is regretful, one, when put in the position to do it again, you don't do it, and you do everything you can to make up for it, and I'm doing each of these.
Well, I commend you for righting a wrong, Jack. I think you're doing a great thing.
Thank you.
So kind of you to join us, and I want to assure our audience that no one was bribed in the course of arranging this interview. Right, Jack?
That's right.
Terrific.
And be sure to go out and buy his book. It's called Capital Punishment.
Thank you, Jack.
Thanks so much.
Thank you. Happy holidays.
Same to you.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You. Pam, incredible story. Wow. Absolutely incredible. We'll talk about it on the other side of the break, and we're also going to, in our second half hour, just review very quickly the host of subjects, and I'm just shocked looking over them, that Pam has tackled on this show in the last year, and share some of the explosive reaction to her stories, and draw a common thread.
Mm-hmm.
What does Jack Abramoff have to do with fluoride or many of the other issues? Stay tuned for that. On the other side of this news break, right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJB. You know, it has been such a fun year doing this talk show, but I tell you, the one show that I look forward to every week is this hour with Pam Colleen. I want to read from Pam Colleen's book, The Addiction, The Hidden Epidemic. Addiction, The Hidden Epidemic, Common Sense Solutions for Our Number One Health Problem. Pam Colleen, of course, as you've heard on the show say many times, we are sicker. By the way, Pam, I was in a staff room yesterday, and I shared this with a group of teachers, and they were talking about life expectancy, and isn't life good, and well, we're all living longer. And I said, that's funny. Pam Colleen tells me we are sicker, we are fatter, and more depressed than ever. And I'm reading from your book, page 288, this quote. The drug companies invest a tremendous amount of money in public relations efforts in order to fool us into believing that their mission is about improving our health. Anybody who thinks that the drug company's primary responsibility is anything other than maximizing their profits probably should believe in Santa Claus or the Tooth Fairy as well. As P.T. Barnum said, there is a sucker born every minute. What a year it's been. I can't believe I've just been looking over the list of all the topics that you have covered. Let's start with the one that's probably closest to the hearts of Londoners in terms of an issue that we're about to decide, fluoride in the water. I mean, literally, tell us about the author who suggested that at the Middlesex London Health Unit, if they're not doing their homework and protecting us based on the research that they should be doing, they're murderers.
Well, that was Dr. Pierre-Jean Morin who said that. And in some of his writings, apparently, he's alluded to that as well. He wrote the book Fluoridation, Autopsy of a Scientific Error. And so there are a lot of scientists around the world who are criticizing public health, the dental associations, and so on, for not doing their due diligence, for basically only listening to one side of the story. And, of course, this is the power of lobbyists. This is the power of what I call, and many people call, marketing-based science. It's not evidence-based science. It's marketing-based science.
I thought the interview that we had in the last half hour, Jack Abramoff, was, first of all, it was astounding. It was explosive. But what an accent it puts on everything that you have been saying all year.
Well, I mean, this is, he's the type of whistleblower that we can only dream of finding. I mean, we had Dr. Shiv Chopra on this show, and again, a whistleblower from within Health Canada, saying that the system is broken and it needs to be fixed. Essentially, the people who are out there criticizing the system say, we need to basically break down these systems and start from scratch because they are just so contaminated.
Would you draw a common thread? And I've got about something like 20 topics that you have tackled in the last year. And now we've got this lobbyist. Draw a common thread, because people are asking, what does Jack Abramoff have to do with fluoride in the water?
Well, essentially what he's representing is the fact that our voices are not being heard. And we have a classic example here in London where we would like to ask Health Canada questions at our upcoming public participation meeting. And so far to date, we have no idea whether or not we're even allowed to ask Health Canada questions. So what do they mean by public participation? It sounds to me like it's a little one-sided. And also what we're basically encountering here in London is obstacles within the city councillors themselves. They're not, certainly the emails I've sent to my city councillor, Paul van Meerbergen, have not been answered whatsoever. We've asked for safety studies proving that fluoride is safe. And so far, they haven't been able to produce these safety studies, and we know they won't be able to because these studies don't exist. So we are running into all sorts of obstacles, and even the other day, Mayor Fontana tried to nix the public participation meeting as well. So we're seeing all sorts of underhanded tactics, I believe, in terms of trying to get the truth out about fluoride.
You know, if it's Jack Abramoff in Washington, that's one thing. But surely, here in the City of London, we trust Joe Fontana and Denise Brown and Dale Henderson and Paul van Meerbergen to say, you know what, fluoride in the water. On Andy's show in particular, they've been raising some really serious concern. Maybe I should read the book written by three guys with PhDs, one of whom came all the way to London to speak to a meeting. They couldn't hold the crowd in the public library. There were so many people. Maybe I should do a little homework.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the problem we're encountering, is that they're just only listening to one side of the story. And I spoke to Dr. Connett yesterday, and he is really just driving home this point that we have to be very diligent in educating our city councillors about this Health Canada review and how incredibly corrupted it was from the very beginning. I mean, the fact that six people wrote this review who really have no experience in terms of their any research done on the toxicology of fluoride. They're really not the six people that should have been chosen to have been on this review panel. In fact, they could have asked Dr. Hardy Lineback, and they did not. They could have asked Dr. Pierre-Jean Morin, and they did not. So to me, these are very, very suspicious omissions in terms of picking a review panel.
Because let's face it, people have to trust the health unit in London. They have to trust Health Canada. And you have said so many times, they can't be trusted. Let's go to the phones. Jeff, what's on your mind this morning?
Yeah, I've been listening to your show for eons and listening to Pam, and some of the stuff Pam comes up with is just makes my head spin because of the bias you have with it, talking about the city council being underhanded and that. And I guess you must be aware of when you did your fluoride in Kitchener-Waterloo, that one of the dentists there was threatened by one of your anti-fluoride people, and the police were involved. Are you able to tell people about that?
I don't know anything about that.
That sounds very convenient. Well, I'm actually in the dental business, and actually have been in the Kitchener area with this particular dentist that was threatened.
Jeff, let me
by one of your anti-fluoride people, and the police were, it was so severe, the police were involved. So that's what I'm talking about. You're underhanded people as well.
Well, no, hang on, Jeff. Let's be fair. Did that story make the news?
I'm not sure if it did make the news.
Bingo, because I would have jumped on that, like a kid on a muffin.
It would have been up to the doctor and the police. It wouldn't have been up to you, Andy.
Okay.
But Jeff, on the other hand, and I'm not going to name any names. I know anti-fluoridationists who've had their lives threatened as well. So, you know,
The one doctor to say that the fluoride accounts to murdering is actually asinine too. That's ridiculous.
Well, when they know that there's a connection to between cancer and fluoride, and people are ignoring that research, it's really negligence.
Oh yeah, that's a stretch to connect that to murdering, though. That's fear mongering like you have been doing all year long.
Jeff, do you think Pam Colleen is single-handedly responsible for having fluoride ditched from the water in Calgary? In Waterloo, in cities all across Canada, in cities all across the United States, including another one last night. Are you crediting Pam Colleen with doing that single-handedly because of her bias? You need to read the book.
What's your background in fluoride?
Okay, let's not get into that. We're going to have a public meeting in January.
If she wants to publish books, that's one thing. But if she's knowledgeable in terms of credentials, that's another thing.
You read her book. You'll see her credentials. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Kevin. Kevin, go ahead.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, Kevin.
Hi, yes. I just wanted to point out a fact that I think some people overlook when we talk about fluoride here, and that is the fact that the Nazis were some of the first people to introduce fluoride into the concentration camps back in World War II. So that's kind of my point, and that's all I wanted to say. And I think that's a valid point for anybody to think about when we're talking about fluoride in water.
Kevin,
yeah, there's some very clear points around fluoride, which really should have ended fluoride many, many years ago. And one is that even the CDC admits that it doesn't work when you take it internally. It may work if you use it topically, but it doesn't work if you use it internally. I mean, there's all sorts of issues with. I mean, fluoride isn't even an essential nutrient. I mean, how is it that it's somehow going to benefit our health if it's not even an essential nutrient? So, you know, there's a lot of suspicious activity in and around the addition of fluoride in our water. You know, it's just basic biochemistry. How on earth can you put an element in the body and not disrupt other elements in the body? And that's really something that is so basic and unfortunately is being ignored with regards to the addition of fluoride in our water.
And why you would need to soak your kidneys in it when it's designed to protect your teeth. That's what I don't understand. 643-1290. We're going to open up the phone lines. If you'd like to chat with Pam Colleen as we wrap up the year and talk about many of the topics that she has tackled. Jerry, what's on your mind?
Hey, real fast. Gordon St. Clair, God bless him, on Front Page Challenge said he doesn't want rat poison in his water.
Mm-hmm. Referring to fluoride.
Referring to fluoride. Now, also, if you want to really get some backing of this thing, and I'm saying this with a little bit of Christmas witticism, why don't you get your favorite caller to go and say and how the protection of women to get rid of this stuff? Then you'd have the thing won in a hat bet.
Jerry, you got to get over Megan. She shouldn't be ruling your life. Short break. When we come back, Pam Colleen on some of the many topics that we've tackled this year, and there is such a long list, and we'll really get Pam to draw the common thread between all of them in just a moment. And we welcome your call, 643-1290, right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK. And you're welcome to join the conversation, but I just want to, with Pam Colleen, go over some of the issues that she has tackled over the last year, which have had such an explosive reaction from our listeners. Pam, I want you to know I've spent an hour or two every Thursday after you've been on directing people to websites, to books, to authors. Let's go through some of the topics this week. We mentioned fluoride. Raw milk has been so much in the news.
And it's interesting because there is an intricate connection between the fluoride story and raw milk, and part of it has to do with the opposition from industry and preventing this information from getting out to the public. And we know, of course, with raw milk, that raw milk is very important for our bones and our dental health because of the fact that, of course, when you pasteurize dairy products, you kill an enzyme called phosphatase in it. It's really important in terms of being able to carry the calcium into our bones. So, these are two stories that are intertwined, both in terms of the politics behind those two products and in terms of health implications as well.
One common theme that I've seen in so many of your stories is this idea that the political process, as we've seen, is so contaminated by lobbyists. And that was exemplified in our discussion about the pink washing of products. And here, I used to feel so good when I'd see that pink ribbon and, oh, they're contributing to the battle against breast cancer.
Well, and this goes back to, and in the new year, I hope to bring somebody on, and we're going to talk about Edward Bernays, who's the father of propaganda. And it was, I like to blame a lot of this dysfunction on Edward Bernays, because of the fact that he really masterminded the notion of front groups, marketing-based science, and using doctors and scientists and Hollywood actors as spokespeople, representatives of products and so on. All of these very clever marketing schemes were developed by Edward Bernays back in the 1930s. And they've been, of course, made more sophisticated today and are blindsiding consumers even more today than they were even in the 1930s.
What I particularly enjoy... after our discussions, is hearing about some of the people who've come to your classes and so on, whose lives, folks, and I want you to listen to this carefully, because Pam Colleen is changing people's lives. And there have been people who have sought you out on the telephone and in your classes and in your books, literally who were at death's doorstep.
Well, you know, I just educate. That's all I do is educate. And, you know, the caller who called in and asked for credentials, I mean, give me a break. You know, I mean, who needs credentials when it comes to health? You shouldn't need credentials to help somebody get well. You shouldn't have to have credentials to get yourself well. I mean, our ancestors knew how to be healthy, and they didn't have universities, they didn't have labs, they didn't have scientists. They knew how to be healthy on their own just by knowing which foods to eat.
And Catherine Pertl, who we had on the other day, the clarinetist, talk about someone who didn't have credentials. I mean, she was a clarinetist. Those were her credentials, and a very, very smart woman who went to doctor after doctor with all kinds of degrees, credentials. And they didn't know, I was going to use a word there I won't use, they didn't know sugar about her problem, which she then solved herself by doing
the research. Yeah, and I did the same thing. So you know what? I mean, what we have to do is teach the credentialed people how basic some of these health principles are that I teach about, and that has to do with returning to traditional foods. It's not rocket science, and I don't think, I mean, I tell everybody, I mean, why I don't have credentials. I don't want to have credentials, because it's not going to improve my knowledge in terms of what I know around traditional foods. That is so basic, and it's just so blatant in terms of how powerful that is in terms of rendering somebody healthy or keeping somebody from getting sick.
Let's go back to the phone. Sean.
Hi there. How are you?
Good. What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to say thank you very much for what you do. You got me curious with the fluoride topic, and I started getting quite involved with it. And I ended up going to the Board of Health meeting, which they wouldn't answer any questions, which was very concerning. And they just spouted out some of their beliefs, but we weren't allowed to ask any of the questions. And some of the beliefs, what they were saying was, you know, they would say that fluoride occurs naturally. But looking into it, calcium fluoride occurs naturally, but the stuff they put in our water, the hydrofluorosilicic acid, it's a waste product. So they couldn't answer that, and they kept saying that it was safe and effective, but with no studies ever showing that it was that had been done to prove its safety. That was alarming. And the effectiveness, even the World Health Organization was saying that they studied countries that were fluoridated and non-fluoridated and showed no difference.
So, Sean, here's what kills me. Here's what kills me. Even if you don't understand any of this or have no interest in reading these books or doing any research, there are cities now across North America, several in Canada in the last year, including Calgary and Waterloo, and the latest one from the Maritimes, who have decided, after a vigorous discussion, to ditch fluoride. Then we have Mayor Joe Fontana, who personally, single-handedly, tried to kill a public meeting to discuss the issue coming up on January the 25th. Fortunately, he was not successful. Why would he do that? Why would you kill a public discussion of an issue and simply say, well, we trust the Middlesex London Health Unit? No, you can't trust the Middlesex London Health Unit, because Dr. Bryna Warshawski admitted on this show she hasn't even read the main book.
Well, after attending that public meeting, I wouldn't trust them as far as I can serve them. I mean, if they're on solid ground, and if they're going to force everybody to take this, like, you know, then they should be able to at least be able to answer the public's questions. I know when I go to a doctor and he's recommending that I take a drug, at least I have the opportunity to ask questions about it.
Absolutely. Sean, we have to leave it there. We're just running out of time. what I'd like you to do, Pam, in the two or three minutes we have left, is just some really basic tips to people about starting down the journey of getting some of these answers that you're providing so that they can use them to change their lifestyle.
Well, first of all, they have to start asking more questions. They need to be more discerning. They just can't trust the powers that be. And I think we do need more critical voices. We need more whistleblowers out there to help guide us in the correct direction. If we had the correct information, we would make better decisions around our health, and we're just simply not getting the correct information because there's just too much competition going on out there among industry, and everybody is looking to increase their profits, and they're not interested in our health, really.
It's all contaminated by greed and money. A couple of quick comments from our listeners. Tom, go ahead, real quick.
Yeah, good morning, Andy. Just a very quick comment on this one. Under the Canadian Environmental Protection Act, there is a mandatory period of public input and public consultation. And I mean, let this be the knowledge to everybody that is interested in the topic. For that meeting on the 25th, this is your notice to show up there and to say your bit. And there is an opportunity to speak. There is an opportunity to say something or not if you don't choose to. But if you don't attend, then you're not making a difference. So.
Tom, I appreciate it. Let's go to Tim. Tim, go ahead.
I think we lost him.
Okay, we lost him. Okay, let's wrap it up. First of all, the fluoride meeting is January the 25th. Will there be an open discussion, or will it be prescripted?
Well, I think that, it's hard to know what will happen. I think that people need to show up at the general meeting that's going to be taking place with city councillors on January the 10th, and we need to be there to be present, to let them know just through our physical presence that we are wanting this meeting on the 25th. We don't want to see anything happen to compromise the date or the quality of this meeting in terms of the democratic process. We need to be able to ask Health Canada questions, and our city councillors need to be there to represent us, not any other group, but the people.
Here's my challenge to every city councillor: read Paul Connett's book. And if you don't have the time or the inclination to read his book, you have no right whatsoever to make a decision for us on the issue of fluoride. That's where it starts, right there. Pam Killeen, it's been a wonderful year. I think you've done a tremendous service to this city and so far beyond. Quick word about your website, where most people don't even know.
Well, my website is just my name, pamkillen.com, and I've listed some upcoming events I have coming up at the library in February. I'm teaching a nutrition boot camp, and I have some other classes coming up in April. So I have all of that on my website.
And some of these authors and guests that we've had, like Jack Abramoff, promoting his new book, Capital Punishment. Incredible stories, and yeah. You can hear them all on your...
Yeah, I put them on my multimedia page, and if people want to friend me on Facebook, I also usually post them there as well.
Wow. Pam, thank you so much. 11 o'clock
news
just around the corner. When we come back...